Hello again and welcome to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elbin here, along with my co-host and dear friend Bob Bupka. Bob, I'm excited to welcome, I know you are as well, Charles Davis is our special guest today, the pride of Tennessee. And wow, much like every other Tennessee fan, how much fun was he having at the end of that game when they finally broke that streak and beat Alabama on a remarkable Saturday in sports?
Yeah, you know, Kelly, when we were doing the interview with Charles last week, I asked him, I said, what's it going to be like in Knoxville this weekend when Alabama comes? And he said, are you kidding me? It's going to be awesome. And I said, you got a chance at winning? He says, yes, we do have a chance, even though his team hadn't won in 15 years. But 100,000-plus Tennessee Volunteer fans got some treat watching Alabama go down to Tennessee on the last play. Incredible to watch. Incredible to watch. And the ceremony after the game was just so joyous to just think how great those Tennessee fans were feeling.
That's the word, joyous, and you could see it. I mean, they stormed the field. the goalposts were gone before long. Some of them, I understand, were found in the river nearby. Had to be the greatest day in the history of Knoxville, Tennessee, but it was also just an unbelievable sports day in so many ways. I mean, you had the Houston Astros clinching and getting to the National League champion, excuse me, the American League Championship Series with an 18 inning win over the Seattle Mariners. You had the San Diego Padres rallying to eliminate the Los Angeles Dodgers. And boy, is that a big blow to that ego driven LA fan base. And then the Philadelphia Phillies that are on a major roll, knocking out the defending champion Atlanta Braves. At the end of that evening, the Utah Utes going for 2 points late in a game to knock off previously unbeaten USC. It was a massively fun, great sports day. And one of those, Bob, that old cliche, if you're not a sports fan from Saturday, you ain't a sports fan.
Yeah, matter of fact, so many great things happen. You would think that it was a Hollywood script written for how to have a joyous day as a sports fan. It was incredible. Start to finish, you touched on all of the highlights. And boy, you're really blessed if you're a sports fan to get a day like that. It was as good as it gets as far as I was concerned.
Bob, let's talk for a minute or two about kind of the other end of that sports totem pole, if you will, and that's the struggles of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. There's also struggles, certainly, with Russell Wilson that were on display last night in Denver, losing yet again in a nationally televised game. But Brady, there's obviously a lot of personal issues going on there. He's yelling at his lineman. He's going to Bob Kraft's wedding and missing a team flight. Aaron Rodgers and their loss and the Packers' loss to the Jets. He seemed to have very little, and he's lost a lot of his offensive weapons. Two guys that you kind of wonder what will happen. I still think Brady has better players that will be a better cast around him, but both of those guys, at least right now, are struggling in ways that we literally have never seen them struggle.
Absolutely. And I don't know if Mr. Kraft is going to be eligible to write a book on how to be happily married. He gets married 3 days before the game. And at the game, he didn't bring his wife. I don't know if they had already had a little tiff, or maybe she hates football.
Well, it worked out fine. Bill Belichick did not make that wedding, by the way, because he was preparing his team to go out and win, which they did on Sunday. Tom Brady did attend the event, and obviously the Buccaneers played very poorly against the Pittsburgh Steelers. A couple of other things. There's a guy named Robbie Anderson, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers, actually former wide receiver of the Carolina Panthers, by the way, Bob. Anderson, who actually changed the spelling of his first name, is now changed to a new team because he was essentially tossed off the field by a new interim coach in Carolina. And then a day later, yesterday, as we record this, he was shipped out. You know, as ego-driven as the game is these days, I think some coaches get fed up enough and they literally tell their guys, get off the field, and they find ways to get rid of them. You don't want cancers like that in any kind of locker room.
No, absolutely. I think it was a courageous move on his part, but I think it was a valid move. The move of the weekend for me had to be 63-year-old Fred Couples shooting a 60 to win the PGA Tour Championship event. Unbelievable, Freddie. 63 years old, and you hang a 60 on him to win another title. Absolutely incredible.
Wasn't that great? Where did that come from, Bob, by the way? I mean, Fred, he's that sheer number of 63. It's a tough age to be as competitive out there with the 50-year-olds. But magic he found for a day, didn't he?
Yeah, and it's amazing, too, because he spends most of his time now practicing as an assistant captain, whether it be for a Ryder Cup team or President's Cup team. Fred seems to enjoy getting clean towels for the players.
Yeah, he's good at it. And will be most interesting to see if he might still get that nod as the Ryder Cup captain. It's the one captaincy that has eluded him. There's a lot of politics involved years ago as to why the PGA of America did not tap him to be the Ryder Cup captain. Phil was obviously the one who was going to be selected for Bethpage in 25 on Long Island, but that's not going to happen now because of LIV Golf. I think Fred could get that, could still be the Ryder Cup captain.
I don't know. You know, you have a certain amount of time in the spotlight. As my thoughts are, you know, if you're in the spotlight for the PGA of America, it's during that limited window that you get selected. I think maybe the window of opportunity has closed on Fred Couples. He certainly would make a very popular one. And then you got to ask yourself, the truth, Kelly, would Fred Couples want to be a Ryder Cup captain at his age now? I mean, he's going to be over 30 years older than a majority of the players on the team.
Legitimate question to ask. I would only say that he, because as you mentioned, he's been this assistant captain in this President's Cup, Ryder Cup rotation in the last 6 to 8 years. He's still very familiar with the players. They see him. They may not know him particularly well, but he's still around them. And I don't think it'll happen either. But if it's going to happen, it'll be in 25, because I think there's an opportunity there because of Mickelson being out. Another golfer, Bob, and I knew this day was going to come, by the way, that John Daly was going to have a movie about his life. It's perfectly made for a Hollywood script. He's the craziest golfer I've ever been around. And Jonah Hill, who's a really good actor, apparently he's been tabbed to portray Daly in a film on JD's life. I was around him one night in 1992, the year after he won the PGA Championship at Crooked Stick, and it was in St. Louis, and he took batting practice with the Cardinals after playing a round of golf. It's a media day. I have never been around somebody who was, to me, more like a Babe Ruthian type of situation. Every woman that night wanted to be with him. Every guy wanted to pat him on the back and buy him a drink, and it ended up in a crazy ending to the night, which I'd rather not get into all the details, but it was classic John Daly. And it, you talk about great material for a movie, John Daly.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And I remember John Daly at Hooters at Augusta, right down from the front entrance of Augusta National. He had his trailer there selling T-shirts. It was in a parking lot. I was there when this lady saw that it was John Daly, got so excited, boom, drove a car right into John Daly's trailer. It could only happen to JD, and he was laughing about it, but on the inside, he wasn't too happy.
Every vice possible he's had, and yet he's still going, and he can still play every now and then, and Jonah Hill's a good pick for that. I think it'll be good. I'll be interested to follow as that movie is filmed and then ultimately comes out probably in the next couple of years. Hey, one other guy we should note is Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley had entertained a little bit of interest in LIV Golf, played in one of the pro-ams before an event. There was talk about would he go to work for LIV. He had talked previously back in the spring, Bob, about maybe retiring from his incredible gig with TNT, with their pregame show. Well, now comes word that he and the other guys on those pregame and postgame shows, 10-year deal for Barkley. It looks like in the range of $200 million, a life-altering deal, he's calling it, and makes NBA fans really happy as the NBA season begins. Maybe Sir Charles leveraged that and worked out exactly the way he wanted.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think Charles, ultimately, you know, he's going to have the money here or doing what he loves, or he was going to get money from Liv. Speaking of sticking to your game plan, I got my TV already programmed. Syracuse at Clemson. Syracuse is the lowest ranking unbeaten team. Clemson's defense is menacing. That should be a Jim Dandy of a football game.
Yeah, it's on paper, it's the best matchup of the college games going into this week. And Clemson, that defense, menacing is a good word. Florida State had some opportunities against them at in Tallahassee over the weekend, but they couldn't make plays against a fast-paced, aggressive defense that I think will make it difficult for Syracuse. Syracuse will score, but I still think, even though Syracuse is unbeaten, I think Clemson is at a different level. Bob, real quick, give me, I'll take the Philadelphia Phillies over the San Diego Padres in the National League Championship Series. As we record this, the Yankees and the Cleveland Guardians are going to be playing game 5 of that series. Astros are on a roll. So give me a World Series of the Phillies and the Astros. What do you think?
Well, it's certainly a possibility, but don't count San Diego out and don't count Cleveland out, even though they are playing the New York Yankees. I know one thing, Major League Baseball will be some disappointed if they don't get Philadelphia and the Yankees, in the World Series or the Houston Astros. Either one, Yankees or Astros, Major League Baseball wouldn't care. They're both powerhouses. They both get eyeballs to the TV set.
Well, you know, Major League Baseball, they're not saying it outwardly, but they want to have that major market in the Yankees because they lost Los Angeles with the Dodgers gone. The Mets are gone, and yeah, that's a lot of people that would not be watching if the Yankees don't make it. A lot of people watch Charles Davis along with Ian Eagle on CBS Sports coverage of the NFL. We're really excited to have Charles along. He's been a favorite of mine for a long time. Excellent at what he does. Very, very good analytical view of both the NFL game and in college scouting leading into the NFL draft. You'll hear all about that from Charles Davis when you hear from him right after this word from our very good friends at Titleist.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Bob, I know both of us are excited to welcome our special guest today. His career has been a fascinating one since his playing days for the University of Tennessee Volunteers. He's been a tournament director for a PGA Tour event. He was the director of the United States Olympic Training Center. But you know him best for his outstanding work as a college football analyst and currently as an analyst for CBS Sports Sunday NFL coverage, sitting alongside our friend Ian Eagle. We are delighted to welcome Charles Davis. Charles, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much for having me on with you guys, and I appreciate your kindness.
You know, Charles, I think we met at the Disney event. I'm certainly nobody that you would remember, but I remember you.
Well, I appreciate you. Appreciate you remembering me. That was a fun time. I mean, that was a great time of my life, to a PGA Tour golf event. Disney World. We had the our spot in the tournament rotation then was an enviable one, because we had the last spot of the year before the tour championship. So you remember those days, it decided the top 30 money winners, the top 125 who kept their card, the Money Champion, all sorts of things came out of that last event. So it was always fun to see guys who didn't want to play down the stretch all of a sudden maybe needing to play, and we're getting those late entries in. And I'll be frank with you, a lot of guys didn't want to play our event, and it was because our event was also a pro-am, and we would have 3 days of the amateurs playing with the pros. And, you know, everyone wants to put on a nice face and do a regular pro-am, but no one wants to do it when they're out there grinding for real. And so that was a tough time. But you know how I recruited them? I would send letters from Mickey and Minnie Mouse addressed to their children. It's a little bit of dirty pool, but hey.
Good move.
Well done.
Hey, Charles, I just need to know from you, how exciting is it when Alabama comes to Tennessee?
Oh, the third Saturday in October. That's what that game is called. It has been called that for a long time, but it hasn't been a legitimate title for a good number of years now because Alabama's dominated the series. Give you a quick background on it. Bear Bryant, of course, a legendary coach at Alabama. Everyone knows the Alabama-Auburn rivalry is huge. Coach Bryant always considered Tennessee a bigger rival, and it drives the Auburn people crazy, but it's true. And Tennessee and Alabama are the ones who helped put football on the map in the South, going all the way back when Coach Bryant was a player. And he actually played against Tennessee with a broken leg. I mean, that Tennessee game meant a lot to him. That's why when they beat us, there's cigars in the locker room. And he used to tell his players all the time, you become a man around here when you beat Tennessee. Now, in recent years, we haven't kept up our end of the bargain. But now that we're back with a good team, top 10 ranked, here comes Alabama. The excitement is back. Our fans are hopeful. I was in Knoxville just on Tuesday for an unfortunate circumstance. A man who was the second father to me was there for his funeral. But I was only there hours, and you can feel the whole town pulsating. So, yes, it'd be a big deal.
That's a contractual thing too. You mentioned about the third Saturday in October. That dates back a long time, and that is a firm contract between the two schools that it's always played on that third Saturday, right?
Yeah, and it has been for forever. But you remember when the SEC expanded? When we expanded to 12, it wasn't a big deal. We could keep the third Saturday, but the next expansion made it a little more problematic. So every so many years, it actually shifts off the third Saturday to the fourth Saturday in October. So it's a rare occurrence, but you're exactly right. Prior to all this expansion and the new world of college football, yeah, Tennessee and Alabama, the third Saturday in October was a lockdown deal. You don't even bother trying to put anyone else on the schedule. That's when we were going to meet, and it was a big deal. And, you know, when I played in school in the 80s, and even before that, of course, and into the 90s, Alabama played a certain number of games in Birmingham at Legion Field. And, you know, the Auburn game was always there. That's where those two would meet. Tennessee, when we played Alabama, that was one of the games they'd play every time in Birmingham. Now, of course, they play everything in Tuscaloosa.
You had some big interceptions, Charles, throughout your collegiate career. Was one of those a personal highlight?
For me, because they felt like rare occurrences, there were a lot of personal highlights. I got a pop fly interception in the Sugar Bowl against Miami when they were number two in the country, and we beat them 35-7 and knocked them out of a potential national championship. That was one that felt really good. I got one against Alabama that Mike Shula, their quarterback, who's now coaching for the Buffalo Bills, gets mad because we show it usually during draft time every year. He's like, quit showing that interception because I got it off the mic. So that's a particular one. And then there's the one that I call the one that got away. I got one late against Ole Miss in my freshman year and gave us a last chance to win the game. And we had a clip on the interception and lost yardage, and then we ended up losing. And if we had won that game, we were going to the Cotton Bowl to play number one Texas.
Wow.
And we missed the opportunity, losing to Ole Miss in an upset at home. Georgia ended up going to the Cotton Bowl and upset number one Texas, and we missed a great opportunity. So that's the one I call, that's the one that got away. And so I remember it way too well.
Well, we're really pleased to be joined by Charles Davis of CBS Sports. I've got to ask you, at UT, you majored in political science. You got your master's degree in history. How did the broadcasting thing come to be? Did you do any of that while you were in college? How did that happen?
Oh, you know, a lot of it has been a fluke, but you go back to my college days. I appreciate the question very much because, yes, political science undergrad, master's in history. But there's a man that I went to college with by the name of Mike Moore, who became a big-time producer, executive at ESPN down the road. Mike had a fantastic career. And I'm sure he's still in the business consulting and doing some other things. But we were students together, and he was working for UTV, as we called it, the kind of the student broadcasting and the local broadcasting stuff on campus. And I was hurt. I had a shoulder injury, and I wasn't doing as much in spring and whatever. And he said, hey, why don't you come over and do some TV stuff with us? And so I did some things, and he showed me how to shoot a camera. He showed me how to put together a package, how to do a story. He really took me from the ground up, and I did a few of those things. And if anyone ever finds them, it'd be better than any stand-up show you would ever go to. Like, you know, Chris Rock or whatever. Yeah. I think you'd laugh more at the stuff I did back then than you would at Chris's stage show. But he kind of gave me the bug for it a little bit. But then it didn't feel like it was to be. And then I got into the broadcast world a little bit later as a total fluke. I was working for Disney Sports at the time when I got the phone call to come and try and give it a try to be an analyst. But yeah, I did a little bit of that stuff in college and had a blast doing it. We used to do that. And there was a show called Big Orange Sunday where you'd come in and break down the game from the day before with our legendary broadcaster and play-by-play man, John Ward, the face of the Vols, the voice of the Vols. And I'd go and do that a little bit with him on Sundays. And I'm telling you, I saw a couple of pictures of that recently. And I was just like, who's the guy with the look of the deer in the head? Oh, that's me.
Hey, listen, Charles, you joined Fox Sports in 2006. What was it like to call the BCS National Championship games in 07, 08, and 09?
Well, you know that expression, dream come true? I still wasn't really believing it was happening. I mean, the opportunity came about. David Hill and Ed Gorn and Bill Brown were the leading people at Fox Sports at the time, and they took a chance on a pretty unknown guy, and that was me. And the first year, it was myself, Tom Brenneman on play-by-play, Chris Myers was on the sidelines. But the real attraction that year was Barry Alvarez, the athletic director of Wisconsin, the Hall of Fame football coach. And they paired me with him, I think, because Barry had never done TV. So I think they were kind of backstopping themselves and hoping that we could mesh and, you know, I could be there to help a little bit. But Barry was the attraction. I mean, you know, you're hiring Barry Alvarez.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I was like, you're asking me to be a part of it? Absolutely. You want me to hold the cords for someone? What do you want me to do? I'm in. And got in and was able to do that. And then the second year we did it, it was just myself in the booth with Tom Brenneman, and we just went on from there. Yes, what it was like, truly a dream come true, truly an incredible opportunity. The tough part for the college football fan, though, was all year long they had ESPN, they had, you know, CBS Sports doing the SEC. We didn't do college football at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that just wasn't happening. So when the biggest games of the year came on, the BCS games, because back then, you know, that was all the biggest bowl games plus the national championship game, all of a sudden they had brand new people coming at it. It was like we orbited in from another planet. And you know, I do have a theory about it, and I think it holds up. People may complain about broadcasters and announcers and what have you, but when they get used to them, they kind of accept it anyway. Even if they say they don't like a certain person or persons or whatever, but okay, I get it. They're there. When they don't know you at all, that's a tougher one. Like, oh, who are you guys? What are you doing here? You know, where's Herb Street? Where's Fowler? Where's you know? And it just goes on down. Where, at the time, it's Brent Musburger, right? Where are those guys? So that was an interesting time for us, but it was a phenomenal time. And I mean, think of it this way. First game we did as a crew was Boise State, Oklahoma.
That was a classic game. Okay. Classic, right?
Our second game was Florida, Ohio State, when Florida upset Ohio State for the national title.
Wow.
You know, so we got to do some really good ball games down the road. We did the Florida, Oklahoma national championship game, LSU, Ohio State in the Superdome. And LSU, you know, kind of a de facto home game, but they were down 10-0 early. And I think up 24-10 at the half and one going away, essentially. We had a blast. It was a whole lot of fun. And I'll say it one more time. Dream come true. And at the time, I thought, just let this dream keep going. Don't wake me up. I'm loving this.
One thing you also love and do very well is cover the NFL scouting combine. And that has gotten huge over the last dozen years or so, and the NFL draft. What is it about those events that excites Charles Davis?
I think what excites me is a couple of things. Number one, you really get to know who these people are. You know, getting ready for a game is one thing, as you guys know, right? You got about a week to get ready, essentially. And so you're going to cover it as deep as you can, but you're not going to get quite as many stories, you know, in a week's time about people, their background, where they came from. The draft, you know what the run-up is to the draft. It's essentially years.
Yep.
But when you boil it down, starting in January with the All-Star games and the end of the college football season, and the draft's not until the end of April, it's 24/7 all the way up to that time. You really get to know who these people are. You get to know their backstories. You get to know their triumphs. You get to know the tragedies they may have overcome. You find out where they may have had some issues early in their career, and they really blossom into mature young people. All of those things kick in. The second part is we're all matching wits with each other. Let's be honest about it, right? Fans nowadays have better access to information, to game tape that they never would have had before, to being able to watch these kids play. So they can analyze the players the same way we can. There's no real magic formula that we have. In the old days, we used to have the all 22 tape, right? Where you could watch the game and see all 22 players at one time. Now that's available for fans. So that kind of used to be our trump card. Like, hey, I got the all 22. I get to see everything. Ooh. Now they're like, yeah, me too. I watched 10 games. You're like, oh, man. So you better be on your game and you better be on your P's and Q's, because fans have better access. They're more informed. Their opinions are much more rooted in what they're actually able to see, as opposed to just saying, I like this person versus that person. So we better respect that, give it credence, but still be able to form your own opinion. So essentially, we're matching wits with the people who are following and enjoying. They're like, Davis, that guy can't play, and I'll tell you why. They can very well watch five of that person's games. And so when it all rolls out, mock drafts, does a team fit with a certain franchise or organization? Does that player have the speed requisite to play? Does that player work in this system versus another system that might be better for him? All that swirls in, and then you see how it falls off, you know, it rolls out, and then you kind of revisit it every 3 to 5 years to see how it kind of played out.
So pleased to be joined by Charles Davis here on Musings on Sports. And you talked about the sophisticated sports fan for the draft, and you certainly have a sophisticated sports fan when you sit down on Sundays now with Ian Eagle to call NFL games. You worked with Kevin Burkhardt at Fox Sports.
Yep.
Now you're with Ian, having replaced Dan Fouts. But what? Give a sense for those listening. What's the feeling like for you on a game day in the booth with the preparing and calling NFL games?
Right before I start with that, you mentioned people I've worked with. Let me just tell you how fortunate I've been in my career. Okay. I can't go through every person I've worked with as a play-by-play person. We'd be here for you know, a couple of days, and you guys would run out of time, all right? But not giving short shrift to people I worked with on the way up, meaning Sunshine Network, right? Fox Sports South, you know, any ESPN Regional, any of that, because there's some phenomenal broadcasters there. From the time I hit Fox Sports, if we want to call it so-called getting to the bigs or whatever you want to call it, right? Tom Brenneman, Kenny Albert, Gus Johnson, Kevin Burkhardt, Sam Rosen, Iron Eagle now with CBS.
Pretty strong.
Am I a fortunate person?
Yeah.
am I fortunate? The answer is very much so. What it's like doing it is college is how I kind of put it. Midterms and finals. You remember those days?
Unfortunately, I do.
Oh, God. Here comes finals, right? And you remember the cramming. You remember the lost sleep. You remember feeling somewhat confident. And the worst thing that could happen is as you're walking somewhere, you hear someone say something that relates to your class and you didn't know it or you hadn't heard it and you flip out. I don't have that. What the heck? And you immediately go into a panic mode. Well, that's what it's like getting ready for a game to me. It's like midterms or finals, and I feel pretty good and I'm confident. And then on Sunday morning, I'm walking around the field just saying hello, talking to people, and someone will go, hey, did you know that Bobby Jones' shoelaces snapped 15 minutes? What? I didn't have that. But you've got to trust that what you've done in preparation, you trust it, you trust your partner, and Iron Eagle is someone that I trust implicitly, and he is exceptional at what he does. His preparation, his presentation, his knowledge of the game, his knowledge of the sport, the facts, the rules. My goal is to keep up with Iron. Now, if I keep up with Iron, I'm going to be okay. I don't know that I am yet, but I'm trying, believe me. And the trust is the word that I use a lot, is he and I being able to look at each other, silent communication, understanding when he wants to go in a certain direction, him knowing from me, hey, I told you during the week when we talked, if this situation arises, we should, you know, all those things come together on game day. But yeah, and as soon as the game's over, I have books that I take with me on the plane to start studying for the next game. Because guess what? Here comes the next midterm, next final in a week's time.
Great way of looking at it. And Charles Davis, we can't thank you enough. And I know our listeners are going to enjoy hearing you. But it's been a pleasure having you on Musings on Sports. And we wish you the very best.
And thank you so much. All the best to you. Continued success. Fantastic. Thanks again for having me on. And the bottom line is, how much fun do we have getting to do what we do, right? I don't know what anyone else says. We all get to do this. This is fun. I always tell people there's work involved, but our work, we look forward to. It's different.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover, the smarter tour ball.
Well, Bob, as we led into with Charles Davis, he's done a lot and very, very passionate about the game, very knowledgeable about the game, meaning football, and really a pleasure to hear from him. Some great stories. And as we mentioned at the very, very start, being a Tennessee Volunteer, he's in a good spot right now.
Yeah, we can always say, hey, look, Charles, you came on our show and volunteers win. So I think maybe we have a permanent guest whenever we want it, but he certainly was enjoyable and informative.
Well, we thank Charles Davis very much for joining us. Next week, Billy Kilmer, who actually played the shotgun offense back in 1961 as a rookie in the NFL, will be joining us on Musings on Sports. We look forward to hearing from old whiskey Billy Kilmer next week. Thank you all again for joining us in this episode of Musings on Sports. You can catch us anywhere you listen to podcasts.